Welcome to the podcast Jagdy, Ukraine Life. Jagdy means how are you in Ukrainian. I am your host, Lucia Cirki, a former correspondent, now a book author and a freelancer. I am more than delighted to welcome today's guest on the show, Olena Razvadovska. Olena is a Ukrainian children's rights advocate and co-founder of Voices of Children. Voices of Children is an organization that provides psychological support to children affected by Russia's war against Ukraine. Welcome to the podcast, Olena.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks for joining us today. In 2015, after war struck Ukraine for the first time, you left your job and moved to the gray zone to help and to volunteer with children. What compelled you to make that decision?
Because of my background as a child rights advocate and protection of children's rights. So it was very obvious when the war started, when the anti-terroristic operation firstly started in Ukraine in 2014, it was more than 10 years ago, can you imagine, after the annexion of Crimea. So it was very, back that time, big frustration because nobody from us was ready, was prepared to work in a conflict zone and to work and to protect children affected by military operations, anti-terrorist operation, by occupation. Yeah, so Crimea is a huge territory, and Donetsk and Luhansk Oblast, it's a huge territory with a population around 1 million of children. So we understood that so many children was affected by this occupation and invasion. So it was very obvious that we don't know on a practice how to protect them. That like we have a lot of conventions, Geneva conventions, we have a lot of international documents. But in reality, how it should work? Do we have to evacuate all of the children from Donetsk and Luhansk and Eastern Ukraine? And it's a huge amount of cities and people. Do we have to evacuate them somewhere? How they have to continue to go to school? Like, yeah, it was a huge moment of frustration and understanding that we have theory, but we don't have a practice. So with the time, I understood that I have to know by myself what does it mean to be a child living in the war zone and living in the cities and villages by the front line and with the block posts, with checkposts, with the soldiers, how it influenced on them with separated families and so on. So just a simple professional interest. And I like to do everything on the practice. So I couldn't stay just in Kiev just to receive a report what is going on there. It was understanding that we have to have this practical experience with children. In the beginning, I thought that I will move maybe for 1, 2, 3 months and we'll meet children, we'll see villages, we'll see what's going on there, why don't they left these cities, how do they go to school, how do they spend their free time. But it turns into 5 years because it turns that it's not very simple and it's not very easy to get experience of war for 2-3 days, you know, for 1 month. And I was shocked that it's just a huge amount of children was living in the cities and villages heavily affected by military actions, war actions, by landmines, minefield, by militaries, and it influenced everything, their free time, their school time, their parents, their family. So it was obvious that I better do something concrete on the ground than stay somewhere in the capital.
And how did like this experience of living, you know, so close to the front line shape you personally? You know, what influence did it have on you personally?
Yes, it's always influenced very personally. Every human who experienced war, like it's something that you can never forget or continue to live without this experience of war. It's something that stays with you and changes you forever. First of all, you start to think about really important things in your life. Second, I start thinking in the situation like you never have a time, you never have a plan. You're always thinking only about to stay safe and to stay alive. It's also showed me a lot of meaningful things, and also it gives me so much understanding of childhood, of children, of their understanding of war. Because being adult, I was 30 with something back that time. Yeah, now I'm 40, so it was 2015, so I was 30 with something. And in this age, you see the war from one perspective. But when you meet a 10-year boy or 7-year girl, you just communicate with them and play with them and have a time with them. Like sooner or later, you start to talk about the war. What do they see around them? How do they react? And it just gives that understanding of children's views on this, on the example. Like usually when I came in some village and it's isolated, very close to the front line, sometimes it could be electricity cutting for weeks, like no nothing, like no any kind of leisure for children. Just the gray streets with the block posts, with the feel you're not allowed to go anywhere. You just... And this is what the adults see. This is what I see. And I see, oh my God, what a huge depression. How children can live here. Why do these parents are staying live with them here? And then when you meet children, they will ask you, hi, Lena, we just go now to play outside. We just want to go to play with the snow. And we are building some castle there. And I see that they... like anyway, their paradigm and perspective is totally different. It doesn't mean that they don't see nothing, they don't understand nothing, they're stupid or something. No, it just like gives that, you know, that feeling of living one day. You don't know what will be tomorrow, and you are not crying on your destiny. You are not, you know, praying God why you are so unlucky. You just use your day, and if you have a snow, why don't you play snow no matter what happening like around, you know. So this is what really children gives me, that understanding that they are so present at the moment, and it's so important for surviving to be present at the moment, to use any time for just to, I don't know, just to be, just to do what you want to do and continue to play. And this is also gives me that understanding that children always, the game, the play, it's the best way to interact with children, to communicate with children. They, and any kind of game or play really gives them, you like do these connections with the children, and they continue to play no matter what is going on outside. So I always use some games or play with children. But from our adult point of view, it could be seen that they need food, hygiene kit, and some, and I don't know, cash for parents. Yes, they also need it, but their inner needs are so much deeper. And every time I bring some stuff for these villages, some hygiene kit or some humanitarian, because I did a lot of this humanitarian support, volunteering work for these families. We brought a lot of stuff and things. But children will always ask you, will you come tomorrow? When you will come next time? And it shows me that they really need communication. They really need a time with somebody who really sees them.
I assume you know many people there, you know, especially many children, you know, in territories, in villages in eastern Ukraine, who were back in 2015 when you started your work, were, you know, territory controlled by the Ukrainian army. And by now in 2025, that this territory got occupied by the Russian army. How is that for you personally, you know, to know people on such a, you know, like deep level, you know, who are now living under Russian occupation. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, all of these villages where I was working till the full-scale invasion there, all of them are now destroyed or occupied or not exist anymore. Most of the families and children I knew, they fled, they left. And for most of them, we helped to evacuate because they were ready. They were living in the frontline areas, but they didn't want to live under the occupation. So their position was very clear, and they were even before the full-scale invasion, it was a danger frontline area, but at least it was under Ukraine control. But with the full-scale invasion, most of the people and families I know, they fled. Some of them, some of the children that I met and that back then 10, 9, 8 years ago, they already grew up. They are now adults. And they are, some of them are continue to work in our foundation. In some of the villages, we created our spaces where we spend the time with children, and now everything is destroyed. And for a moment, it was tough because everything you created, everything is destroyed. But for now, I understand that the most important thing that happened is that we had this time together, and children anyway have happy moments from that years.
Thank you so much for sharing, you know, your experience with the families in those villages who are unfortunately not anymore under control of the Ukrainian army. More than 3 years into the full-scale invasion, UNICEF warns of a looming mental health crisis among young people in Ukraine, among children in Ukraine. Nearly one-third of Ukrainian teenagers feel persistently sad or hopeless. From your perspective, what is the overall psychological state of Ukrainian children right now from your experience?
Yeah, what we see now, the picture is devastating, because we are the children, we and the children continue to live in a situation of everyday traumatizing experience already 3 years. And what's really do this, make this very hard to work with this trauma, because for example, you could work with a child with, for example, he was scared about the some bombing and he had a panic attack and he went through some period of consultation with our psychologists and now he's mentally fine. And again, another bombarding happened and he's again coming back to our psychologist with again flashbacks and with a request to work. So it's something that, like, the situation is that the number of those children who need the support is so huge. It's much more than our organization can provide. Like all of our organizations inside of Ukraine can provide, it's just impossible because it's millions of children. But even with those with whom we work already, like, it didn't say that this child will not come back to us, because we continue to live in the situation of war, in the situation of attacking the civilians' objects and the residential buildings, and you can watch it from the news like every day. And this is what makes it very difficult. And also, so regarding the requests of children, yes, a lot of requests from teenagers about depression, about one of the top requests from teenagers is that I'm afraid of my future. I don't understand what to expect from my future. And this anxiety comes from there, because they don't understand what to do, where they have to go to study, where they will live even. Maybe their parents will decide to change a city. And it creates, and also they are, you know, they are separated with their friends because so many children like fled the country with the families or changed the place of living. So, or they are those who are now internally displaced families and they have to adopt in a new area. So it creates so many anxiety and stress and frustration for them. Also, young children, very very young children, like age of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There is a children that never enter school even. They had only online online classes, because, for example, it was a COVID in the beginning, so all the schools was online. After, it was a short period of ending of quarantine, and the full-scale invasion starts. So they didn't have the time to come back to school. Like, they continued to study online. So for 4 years, some of the children never been in a physical school, and they never seen in a physical life their classmates. And just I just recently came back from Mykolaiv. It's a city in the south of Ukraine, next to Kherson. So it's a frontline city also. And our psychologist told us that they have one of the teacher from a school, from a local school, reached them, because schools there are online format, and she's a teacher of a fourth class. And she said that my pupils never meet physically, never. They study only online. So can we come to your center in the weekends? And my pupils just meet each other there in your center. And so this is also how our center works in the front lines area, as a territories where you can physically see another children and physically communicate with them. And also it creates a lot of situations for those children who need a speech therapist, for example. It's a huge, huge number of requests for speech therapist among the front line. Because children don't go to kindergarten, they don't develop their communicational skills. They don't play outside in the yards. It can be dangerous. There is not so many children around. All of the events are forbidden. So mainly they are staying at home, and they have to develop their communicational skills. And they have now a lot of problems with it. So this is also how the war affects children, and not in direct way, not with a rocket, you know, but with the consequences of being isolated, of being out of school, out of communication.
Talking about the direct influence of the war on children's life in Ukraine, UNICEF reported that 1 in 5 children in Ukraine has lost a close relative or friend due to the war. How do such losses manifest in children from working with them? How does grief and trauma look like in a child differently from how it might look in an adult?
Yeah, it's a very painful topic. Indeed, a lot of children are lost to their fathers, mainly fathers in the army. It can be also not soldiers, but civilians who were killed by some rocket attack. But mainly it's children who lost their father or mother if they served in the army. Yeah, it's indeed a very painful experience, and it depends on the age. In our practice, in our centers, we have a lot of this type of requests from children and mothers. First of all, it's very hard for mother, because she also in the grief for her husband. And she don't have a time for her children. So very often children are by themselves with this pain. And we really met a very different situation. Sometimes children don't understand why father left them and never come back. Sometimes they don't believe. For example, if their father, there is no missing in the battle, it's something that you don't see the body, you don't have a place where you can come and to grieve, and you just don't, and you are living for years with a dream that maybe one day he will come back, but nobody can prove it to you, and you don't know whether it will happen. Maybe it will never happen, but still you don't have a place where you can come and to grieve for your father. It turns into the conflict inside of the families, because, for example, they can really don't understand, they can show different emotions, and relatives around don't have enough of resilient and space for also respond to these emotions, because the whole family traumatized. And yes, it's in general, I would say that it's one of the biggest problem for Ukrainian children now in this in this situation. From our perspective, our psychologists are working with these cases and with children. But just recently, I met a boy in this Mykolaiv aforementioned. That he came for counseling with our psychologist, and his grandmother bring him to our center. And when the boy already left with the psychologist to the room, like, she said that his father and mother serving in the army both, and he live with the grandmother in Mykolaiv, and she said that, like, they are fine, they didn't die to sing, thankfully, but even that they are there every day, like, he's having very hard time, like, with his emotions, with his stress every day, and so she have to take him to the psychologist once a week, because, like, she said that she cannot handle with his stress and even physical reactions he have, like, with his body. Yes, and it creates for children so many challenges. So I think it.
What gives you, like, strength, Olena? Like, seeing all this pain, seeing, like, all these children in need, you know, of psychological help. What gives you personally, like, strength not to give up? You know, like, seeing, like, all these children in need.
No, we don't have a right for give up. It's just, like, very first that there is no another choice, like, doing at least something. It's I don't feel myself helpless. Like, we have to do something, and it really saves our lives that we at least can do something. So this is what gives us strength and, you know, possibility to continue to work, even that every day it's really harsh. It's every day this bombing of cities, where in all of the cities we have our centers, and every morning starts, is everybody from our team alive? You know, it's sometimes it sounds really, like, not normal. It's completely not normal, but it's better than do nothing. And then what? Why do I have to leave my country and to continue to fight? So I think that the biggest strength of Ukrainian and resilient is that we have to do something, and this is just that we don't have another choice. Like, you are not thinking, okay, maybe I should look for work somewhere else. It's just impossible if you really are. And also, like, you know, there is no family in Ukraine that don't have no connections to army or to this war, you know. So in every family, you will have a relative who will serve in the army. So it, like, you cannot stay, you know, like, you know, without any connections, you know, this is war, not about me. You cannot, if you are living in Ukraine, you in any way you are connected to this war, or somebody from your family serving in the army, or somebody from your family are fled Ukraine, or, like, become IDPs or lost something. So this is what's happening with us. So it's not that me helping a poor children. It's we inside of this war helping each other. These children helps me not to get crazy, that this world is getting crazy. And I help these children with what I can to provide, I don't know, support and help and other things, and give them voice that... at least they, during their childhood, will see not only the war.
What will you say when a person is listening to this podcast? What will you say? What would be, like, the best way to support children in Ukraine suffering due to the war?
Firstly, I would like to thanks to all of the people from around the world that already helped so much to Ukraine. And we, as our foundation, Voices of Children, we received so much support from people all over the world. So first of all, it's a big thanks to all of the regular people who don't know us but feel sad about the situation in Ukraine. And to help children, it's important because the children is those who will live tomorrow, and we want that them grew up prosper and a good adults that will decide our future. And this is so much important. This is why it's so important to help children today. You know, sometimes we can think that, okay, they are young now, they don't understand. Maybe in 10 years we will have some plan and they will grow up and then we will help them. It doesn't work like this because they growing up in those circumstances and with that support that they have today. If today they will not have nothing, so I'm very afraid that we will have a failed state, and with the adults that totally traumatized without any future. And also, why it's so important, because war never have boundaries. Yes, it have now physical boundaries. Bombings and shellings are only inside of Ukraine, but it creates so many pain and ruined families and destinies that it's far more than inside of Ukraine. It reflects on neighbors, on everybody. These souls ruined by war, they can be also some next to you in your country somewhere, and you can be that person that can help somehow to those children or families. Because once hurted person, if they don't have a support and relief and some kind of help, I don't know what they will create. We will have around us only hurted person, only pain. But we want a different war. We are fighting to live in a better world. So what cost our war if we in the end will have only broken country and helpless people? We are fighting to have a better future. So that's why it's so important to invest in the children everything possible today, that our price of our war will not be so high, And yes, and it's also why it's important, the solidarity of international community, because it's important to speak in 21st century that it cannot continue like this, that one big empire in the past and big country can just stepped in another independent country and kill all of the citizens of this, all of the people of this country just because they don't like some of our policies or something. So it just cannot happen like this. So it's very important also to show the children the example that we are fighting for our values, for them, for their flag, for their cities, and for this identity when you are not ashamed to call yourself Ukrainian because you did everything to save this heritage to your children. So that's why it's for us it's very important, the solidarity of whole Europe, because the war is don't have boundaries. Regarding to Russia, it's even physically don't have boundaries. Sometimes I'm thinking that it's only a matter of time when they continue their war far more than in Ukraine, because it's just their national policy to ruin everything around them.
It sounds like you're personally not very optimistic that the war will end anytime soon. Did I understand you correctly?
I'm optimistic about some kind of peace agreements or some kind of ceasefire, but it's so hard to finish the war. What does it mean to finish the war, to end the war? What does it mean? It's a question for us. What does it mean? Russia will never take any kind of conditions that we like to take. It's just impossible until Russia as a country exists, because their national policy is to ruin Ukraine. So, and also it's easy to start the war, but it's impossible to finish the war, because for every person, the price of this war is so individual. Somebody lost husband, somebody lost part of their body, I don't know, arm, leg. Somebody lost the possibility to live in their hometown and, I don't know, lost everything. For everybody, it's a so individual price of this war. And in one day, for everybody, will be the end of the war acceptable for everybody. It's impossible. There is no, even, you know, you cannot, everything returned back. The millions of people are without homes, and the thousands of cities destroyed to the scratch, like to nothing. So how it can returns back and like, you know, we okay, we have finished the war, done. Let's go continue to live. It turns our lives forever, forever. The child who lost her father, it turns, even after finish of the war, it turns her life, it changed her life forever, forever. Those children who've been deported to Russia, even after coming back to Ukraine, it changed, it influenced on, for their lives, like forever. So the war, the consequences of war will stay with us till the end of our lives. And so it's some, so it's this, you know, we are inside of Ukraine, we are, don't even think about these definitions of finishing the war. Yeah, we are thinking about definitions. Please stop bombing us every night, because you know it's impossible to live with all of these shellings, and but we continue to live, people continue to celebrate birthdays, you know, we continue to deliver babies, to burn babies, to get married. Life is continue as normal just during the war, but it will be the paradise for us is if we just we'll have a less air sirens and air attack and killing of civilians every day. It would be already a paradise. But what next? How the Russia will pay a fair price for all of these ruins they do in Ukraine? You know, after the finishing of war, there is another question. And now what? Okay, what we will forgive to them, or what will be tribunal will be, or something. And we know that this is not an easy question, you know, and all of this previous war conflict showed us that it can happen after decades, you know, these tribunals and all of this. So it will stays with us. Like for me personally, I understand that all of my professional career will be connected with the topic of war, no matter well whether it will be ceasefire or it will be continuing of a war, that we already have so much challenges and problems that it enough until the end of our lives to work with it.
What would you say, what is the most urgent question for you at the very moment? Is it to find enough funding for Voices of Children, or is it to find enough experts, maybe, you know, who can give psychological support to children? What is the most urgent need for you at the very moment?
At the very moment, the most urgent need is finance, because we already have so much experts inside of the country. Our psychologists, I'm sure they have that expertise that maybe not so many experts from abroad can have, because we are working in the field and we have a lot of supporters from expertise side from abroad. We have our colleagues from Sweden, from USA, from Norway. We always have supervisions with them. Yeah, but finance, and also in terms of this cutting of American USAID and American grants, it's really hurt a lot of our NGOs. And yes, I would say that this is a big challenge. Yeah, because our government don't have this money. You know, all of our economics inside of country works for the army, for it, and it's like understandable. So NGO and charity sector are existing like 99% because of individual funds from Europe and from other countries, those foundations that give grants.
Let me come to my final question. Thank you very much. I hope that people will, you know, help with the funding, like people who listen to this podcast will hopefully help with funding Voice of Children, at least part of your work. Let me come to my final question. Talking to people in Ukraine, you know, volunteering, you know, working with people who are dearly in need of help, how do you personally cope with, you know, the emotional weight of your job? What can you do for yourself that you can provide help to others? What gives you sanity in this absolute insane surrounding?
Yeah, for me it just becomes a normality. I don't feel, I think that sometimes when I travel abroad, I feel very boring because, you know, like what, nothing happens? Like, where are the challenges? It's just something that I don't, like, in the beginning it was very hard and I burned out for 100 times and I'm in a psychotherapy. Like always constant. I just know now my routine, what I'm doing in my inside, in my normality to keep myself in a good condition without depression and without burnout. And I'm now on the 7th month of a pregnancy and I feel myself perfect. And I travel around the Kharkiv, Sumy, Mykolaiv. I feel myself without any kind of stress. I don't know. It's just something that, like, when you are inside, what can you afraid? I don't know. When you are watching from somewhere far away, you can really think, oh my God, how it's possible. But when you are already inside of this box, like, there is no another choice. Like, continue to live and use our chance for this life in a better, in the most best way for me, for my family, for us. And children teach me also a lot to take every day as a chance to make this day the better day of your life. And to be present at the moment, it's very, very important. Being inside of the war, the worst situation, and I see a lot of burnout and stress among my colleagues. When you are hoping every day that it will finish soon, it will finish soon, it will finish soon, and then I will start to live, then everything change and I will continue to dream, I don't know, to do something. But it's very wrong idea because it just creates container stress inside of you because it may never finish. But your life one day will finish definitely. So to concentrate only on your life and what is it possible. And I'm not in the worst position possible. The soldiers in the front line are in a much, much, much harder position. Children who are living in the front line village are in a much harder position than me in Kyiv. So it gives me like no any even chance to think that I'm weak or something. Just you just do your job and then live your life, and that's all.
Thank you so much, Olena, for joining us on Jagty, Ukraine Life, and congratulations to your pregnancy and
Thank you.
only the best for you and your child.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your invitation.